Welcome to another episode of the Faith Work Rest podcast. Our mission is to help people discern their vocations and reimagine their occupation for the good of their neighbor and the glory of God. We're part of the Surge Network. It's a network of local churches united to put Jesus on display in their community. You can learn more at surgenetwork.com.
Welcome back to another episode of the Faith, Work, and Rest podcast. This is Lauren Kutzko. I'm here with Kimberly Deckel and Jim Mullins, and we've got a great show for you today. We had the chance recently to sit down with Jeff Hanen, and Jim's going to tell you a little bit more about who he is and why we spent some time with him.
Yeah, Jeff is a guy who is like a giant. He's like 6'7". He's the executive director of the Denver Institute for Faith and Work, the founder, the CEO, basically whatever big title you can think of, he is that for Denver Institute for Faith and Work. And I would actually regard him as not just leading the Faith and Work stuff in the Denver area, but I think he's one of the leaders nationally who pulls a lot of these organizations together and is pioneering in the way that he thinks and the way that he's able to look out into the future and say, these are the important questions we need to be asking. Very sharp, very thoughtful guy. And he recently wrote the cover story for Christianity Today, and it was an article called God of the Second Shift. It was some reflections about why the Faith and Work movement isn't as attentive to the working class, and it's a big question he's been wrestling with. All of us have really been wrestling with for a while, and so we were able to interview him, talk about the article. I just wanted to open it up and see what you guys thought about either the article or the conversation we had with Jeff.
Yeah, so I would say that a lot of the content in the article and in the interview are things that are near and dear to my heart, having spent the majority of my career as a social worker and working with folks who really kind of end up in the margins and left out of a lot of conversations and out of just a lot of society in general. I really love just the attention that the article and that the interview draws to the working class and just to their voices, their experience. And I think that you guys will hear pretty early on in the interview with Jeff that it really is a sector of our society that's, I think, forgotten in a lot of ways. And then when we especially think about conversation around faith and work, that a lot of that is really focused on kind of more like white collar jobs. He talks in the interview about what the working class really is, and that, you know, being likely people who don't have a four-year education or people who aren't working like a salary job. And so I think just hearing the thoughts that he has around that is really important in drawing our attention to that group of people. I like, too, just thinking around how do we do that better? Like, how do we better include them in the conversation? And I think a lot of times the mistake that we make when it comes to things like this, and we're considering like how do we include someone in the conversation, a lot of times it's about like come to us, right? Like, you know, and you guys talk in the interview too about how it's really hard for a lot of people really to just leave a job for a day seminar or something like that, right? So a lot of times it's about like, well, we've created this for you, so you need to come, and there's not necessarily flexibility in that. And so I really like thinking about like if we're going to include folks in the working class in this, then going to them and like asking them the questions and how can we really build this around them, their lifestyles, their needs, because I think too, the way that they may interpret like faith and work together is going to look different possibly than how we're thinking around it. So I think so much of it is about shaping it like for them, their voice being a part of it, us going to the working class rather than probably the ways we've traditionally done faith and work. And a lot of things. I mean, I think this is a conversation that could be about like the way church is done too, right? It doesn't always work well for people who have like an overnight shift or something like that.
Yeah, so, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, it's always good to be thinking about ways to include a diversity of voices and lots of perspectives. One of the things that I take, I think, just from my reading of scripture, obviously, is that caring for the least, caring for the most vulnerable, the people that whose voices aren't often in the conversation is really key and is really a top priority. One of the other things that I think has been instructive to me is seeing how a lot of times material or physical riches or wealth leads to spiritual poverty. So the actually having more access to resources, having more privilege sometimes can kind of blind us to things that we're not as deep or as wealthy in when we don't have access to the same material resources. So for example, you know, a lot of times when we're safe and secure in our neighborhoods and have, you know, kind of more in our savings account than we need and things like that, our community and our relationships suffer because of that. We don't notice that we have as much of a need for others. And so when I was listening to Jeff talk about this, one of the things I was wondering is if part of the reason that that group has been quote unquote left out of this conversation is maybe they haven't lost their way on work as much as this kind of more recent knowledge worker, white collar, information age, you know, creative class.
Mm-hmm.
The part of the reason they or I am having such a hard time with the concept of work is because work has started to look so different for me in that class than it has, because I'm not getting my hands dirty. I'm not, you know, sort of struggling to survive or put bread on the table. And when those things are happening, it's almost like we are closer to God's original design for work. So I think that's a major reason to invite them to the table is we can learn so much. So it's not that they need what we've got and they're not coming and we need to sort of open up the message to that group, but it's that we need them at the table because the richer workers of today's day and age almost need to hear that more than,
I think one other thing too that Jeff touched on is that there tends to be kind of like, I think he said, you know, an organization like CCDA and then all of these faith work and rest movements end up being kind of siloed. And I really loved how we talked around that. Like, how can those two pieces kind of work together and be more integrated? Because both have something to offer to each other. And I think it could feel sort of unusual to think of, if we're talking about like vocation and faith, to put justice in that. But just like Lauren talked about, I mean, there's a very strong theme, right, of justice throughout Scripture. And we know that God has a heart for those in the margins. And so how do we, when we're thinking about work and vocation, like how do we remember that there's a justice piece to that too?
Yeah. And one of the, you know, Jeff interviewed me for this article.
Yeah.
I didn't interview him as like reciprocation or anything. But one of the reasons why he asked is because he knows my background is coming from working class. Mm-hmm. I have like one family member on my dad's side who has a college degree. And it was everything from, you know, working as a server, doing a lot of flooring. We have a lot of people in my family who do flooring.
Yeah.
And so I think part of coming at this question came from some of those things growing up. And one of the things I mentioned to Jeff in the article is that I think, and I'm sure I've mentioned this on the podcast before, that there are, you have the Genesis 1 and 2 perspective on work, that work is good. And as image bearers, we reflect what God is like. And then we have the Genesis 3 through 11 perspective on work, that work can be a means of idolatry, injury, and injustice. And what I've noticed is that the white collar workers or creative class or knowledge workers or whatever you want to call it, basically people who have a lot more agency in their work, they tend to gravitate towards Genesis 1 and 2 and the affirmation and goodness of work, but they probably need a stronger dose of understanding how work can be an instrument of idolatry, injury, and injustice, because they are probably closer to using their power for those things.
Yeah.
Whereas I've noticed many of my friends who are very close to the painful, broken parts of work, like the overwork, underpaid, manipulative employers, they tend to see the brokenness of the fall. And have the mentality of, well, you just grind until you just grind until you have a weekend or you have a day off and then you rest well and then you get back at it. Like my dad used to describe life as, life is basically you're in a fight with a bulldog and you just try to see how long you can stay alive. You try to get a few shots in on that bulldog or pit bull. Sorry. bulldogs are kind of cute, but anyway.
So I don't want to be in a fight with one.
Yeah. Just don't fight dogs. Like,
right. That's it doesn't matter what dogs. Yeah.
But anyway, all of that to say is that there seems to be this gravitation to the different perspectives on work, and that we need to be at the table together to see those different perspectives, because we need a dose of both.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's go ahead and just have a listen to what Jeff has to say about faith and work in the working class.
Well, I'm here with Jeff Hanen, the founder of the Denver Institute for Faith and Work, a guy who I have a lot of respect for, a very sharp thinker, and someone who is not just leading in his particular city, but whom I regard as a leader in the faith work movement around the country, really. So, Jeff, it's really good to have you on the podcast. I appreciate you jumping on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jim.
Yeah, man. Well, before we jump in and start talking about the article that you wrote for Christianity Today, I want to help people get a little snapshot of who you are. Can you just give us the mini bio of who you are and what you do?
Let's see. Living in Denver, Colorado with my wife and my four daughters, 10, 8, and 5, and 3. I moved to Colorado about 15 years ago from Minnesota, where I grew up, spent a little time in South America after college, and have been in Denver ever since, and now leading an educational nonprofit, as you said, Jim, called Denver Institute for Faith and Work, where we kind of host our city's conversation on what the gospel means for work and our public life. So we do public events and a leaders program and all sorts of different size group gatherings and some media, all on what the good news means for our work and culture.
And how did God lead you into that work?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I became a believer when I was 18 years old. I was reading Francis Schaeffer and Chuck Colson and some of their stuff on Christian worldview. So very early for me, the concept of faith is not only for my heart, but it's also for the world and for everything we see in the world. That was really fused into my life. You know, in seminary, I would do my seminary classes in Greek and Hebrew, but I'd also be reading The Economist, which was my undergraduate, was Spanish and economics. And then trying to figure out what ancient Hebrew texts, you know, in Nahum mean for international politics was actually a puzzle that I had in my mind. I thought, okay, these seem like so different worlds. I actually came to realize that this is actually what most people live in every day. You go into one world, which is church, or you're listening to a pastor speak about these, you know, ancient texts, and it's your job to figure out what in the heck that means as you're living out your life and your neighborhood and your relationships, but also in industries like, you know, finance or education or manufacturing. And I realized in our city that that is a very underexplored topic. So I thought we would start a new initiative in our city just on that.
That's fantastic. Well, let me throw a few rapid fire questions at you. Just need a one sentence or one phrase answer. Help us get to know you a little bit. So what's been the most influential book in your life outside of the Bible?
Leslie Newbegin's The Gospel in a Pluralist Society. That book changed my life.
Absolutely. Great book. Other than your family, what has been the most formative relationship?
I suppose my wife doesn't count. She's been number one, but right behind her, as far as non-family goes, my good buddy Dave Strunk, who went to seminary with me and is now a pastor in Tennessee. He's been there through thick and thin, and so a good friend is hard to find. I'd say Dave Strunk.
Absolutely. Dave Strunk. Okay, so what about places? There are buildings or a neighborhood or a city that has formed who you are.
You know, my home in Littleton. I think that's the place that most shapes me. I think home, even how it's arranged and what I do on a day-to-day basis, my home is the place that most shapes me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What about a soundtrack for your life? If your life's a movie, what might be some of the songs that would be prominent?
That's a good question. Well, I want to rock and roll. No, that's not it. I really have liked the Porter's Gate songs on Vocation. Those have been really, really moving for me. So those I think would be, at least in this season, thinking about our work at Denver Institute, that'd be the soundtrack for what we're thinking about today.
Those are stellar. Recently, you wrote an article, God of the Second Shift, for Christianity Today. It was the cover article. And I think it was hitting a very important topic. Would you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. I'll just give a brief overview before we hop into it. So they entitled it God of the Second Shift, The Missing Majority in the Faith at Work Conversation. And the reason I wrote it is because we've been doing stuff on the gospel and work for years here in the city of Denver. And I've noticed that the majority of workers, that is those that are in the working class, don't come to our events. And oftentimes they're not in our leaders program. And I wanted to ask the question, why is that? And is it something with the Faith at Work movement? Is it something with me? Or is it something with the culture that I happen to be in and the place that I inhabit in that culture? And I actually think it's all three.
Yeah. Well, for those who don't know what the working class is or how to define that, what would you say the definition is?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the working class, as I define in the article, is simply those without a college or without a four-year college degree. So about a third of Americans have a four-year college degree and two-thirds don't. And so that's some college or a high school level of education. I think the more typical definition of working class would simply be those that get their wages they earn just day-to-day wages and they're hourly workers. So not salaried or generally speaking, not management and above. So those are kind of fuzzy definitions because you can see exceptions to the rule on that. But the majority of people that are working hourly jobs and dependent on that, that's generally what we think about when we think about the working class.
So if you had to boil it down and do a few points and answer that question, why don't folks from the working class show up at a lot of Faith and Work events, what would you say?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. So a couple of things that I noted in the article. Number one, some of them is a question of time. People in professional circles, they tend to have a lot of say-so about their time. But if you are a shift worker, you arrive on time and you leave on time or you don't keep your job. And so leaving for a day-long conference on Faith and Work isn't oftentimes in the cards. Second, agency is one of those questions as well. So what I mean by agency is that we assume that after we talk about, hey, this is how the gospel shapes and work, now you should go and shape your workplace in this way. It assumes you have a certain amount of power to do so. And many of the people in the working class, this is not true universally, but many times it is, they don't have a ton of say-so about how their workplace or how the culture around them is going to happen. So agency is one of them as well. And then one of the things that I was actually really humbled about when I was doing some research for this article was actually the question of identity. People in professional classes, they really tend to see themselves in terms of their work. They are their work. So that kind of first introductory question is, what do you do? That's a pretty typical professional conversation. But in the working class, it tends to be less so. You tend to be less defined by your work and more defined by your family, your neighborhood, and the traditional values that have been passed on to you by those that have loved you. And so it tends to be less of a conversation about, you know, being defined by your work. And so oftentimes we think, oh, who's going to be really interested in coming to something on the topic of work? Well, the people that define themselves by their work probably are going to be a little more interested than those that don't define themselves as much by their work.
Yeah. So I'm going to take you into a scenario. I can hear my grandpa's voice right now. My grandpa, he did flooring for a number of years, and I can hear myself describing a Faith and Work event and him looking at me and saying something along the lines of, why would you need one of those? Why don't you just show up, do your job, provide for your family, go home and do what's right. What would you say if you were sitting across the table from my grandpa in that moment?
Yeah, you know what I'd probably say to your grandpa is, you know, in many ways, you're right. You're showing up, you're doing your day-to-day work, and you're serving the needs of your neighbors, and that's an honorable thing. I do think, though, one of the things that the Christian church may be able to say to guys like your grandpa, though, is to really notice work well done, the beauty of a floor that's well made, and something that oftentimes we don't think about in church context. But I'd also say that Genesis 1 message that you talk about really, Jim, in the article of we need to emphasize the goodness of work and that when we work, we're reflecting God's image. I feel like that's really important for really all of work, but particularly for the working class that may not or may have internalized visions of their work that it's less esteemed than professional work in our society.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you say that the working class has to contribute to the Faith and Work conversation that we might not be getting because they don't have a seat at the table? So what are the themes that might be addressed at the various conferences or in the various books or whatever the medium is, but that everybody needs to hear, but aren't hearing because of the absence of the working class in shaping this conversation?
Yeah, that's a good thing. Two things come to mind. One is sacramentalism. I think a lot of the working class, they work in the physical world every day, from Tony, my mechanic, to somebody at a hotel that's folding sheets. I think seeing God, interacting with God in the physical world rather than only the ideal world, is something that the working class can really help us understand. It is the physical world that we all depend on every day. God can be experienced in the day-to-day of our day-to-day work, and don't have to go to, you know, necessarily like a, you know, like a faith and work conversation. So I think that's one of them. But I think the second thing too, I think conversations about justice they're growing in the faith at work conversation. But I oftentimes see that Christians like at CCDA that are thinking about justice, and they have for a very long time, and the faith and work conversation, they tend to be pretty siloed and separate. So I seeing God's heart for justice and what that looks like inside of our day-to-day work, I think the working class and understanding the challenges as well as the beauty of working class work, I think it's both, understanding those, I think it could really help the faith at work movement to not only think about cultural influence, to not only think about how to shape our workplace, but to also think about labor and labor in America, which the Catholic Church has done well for a long time, but evangelicals have done that not as well. So I think those two things of understanding God in the physical world, as well as thinking about labor in America and some of the real challenges, especially around job quality and some jobs that are simply just not enough to get by in today's society, I think they can really help us understand that and then potentially use the cultural power that professionals have to raise up every valley and make every mountain low.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. What did you learn about stewarding power? Like, what do those with authority and who write paychecks need to hear based on what you've explored?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when I was doing research for this, I'll go back. Before I was doing research for this, one of the reasons I wrote this article was because just a tension point in my own life. And one of those tension points was I hang out with a lot of business leaders, Christian business leaders, by way of my day-to-day work. And I realized actually after talking with Christian business leaders for a long time, oftentimes had the best of intentions, that they had simplistic or oftentimes just wrong notions about the frontline employees in their own organizations. They made assumptions about like, oh, they're lazy, that's why they don't want to advance. Or there were conversations that I was having with a handful of folks that they were shocked that their employees who got their annual wages raised from $28,000 to $30,000 a year weren't jumping with joy for, you know, and happiness, and thought that was like ungrateful. When in the real reality, if you got, you know, a spouse and a kid and you're trying to survive in America on $30,000 a year, it's really difficult. It's really, really hard. And so what I learned actually, and I could see this, and I think I'm more like the Christian business leaders than the working class, but I actually see a pretty big cultural divide, is that we don't understand each other. And a lot of the research from Putnam to Withnow, they're actually showing that a lot of the divides in American society today, we still have obviously racial divides. Obviously, there's gender issues that we need to work on too, but there's very significant divides between class today. And I can see that in a day-to-day basis when I work with business leaders. So I think the context of actually genuinely understanding the working class and how they think and feel about their life, their work, and their values, and then vice versa, I think it's really important.
Yeah. How do you think we bridge that divide? What ideas do you have? What vision do you have for that?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. My hope is that even in a company that you have people with more cultural power that give some of it up and give voice to those who don't or have less cultural power. So when Studs Terkel wrote his book in the 70s, early 70s on working, he said, you know, there's people in society like entertainers and, you know, business leaders that have a lot of voice, but he really wanted to listen hard to people that didn't have voice. And so he would be talking to the lady running the switchboard and how does she think about her work, right? Or the sanitation worker. And Studs Terkel, relatively speaking, had a lot of power as a well-known journalist, but he really, really wanted to listen, and he allowed those voices to come to the surface. So I actually think before we say, oh, this is how that person is, whether it goes back and forth between professional and working class, I actually think context for listening of what's really important and why, and understanding that HR policies of how to serve frontline employees ought to be heavily influenced by frontline employees themselves and not only management. And I think context of listening, they're hard to come by because we generally tend to hang out with people in our own class. But I think we can do that. We can do that in neighborhoods. I think we can do it in the church if we actually have conversations in the church about work and how people think and feel about their work. And I think I'm hopeful we can do it in companies. I think it's harder to do.
Yeah. Well, I think in writing this article, you modeled listening well. I'm just curious, as you researched, as you listened to people, what surprised you?
Actually, the biggest thing that surprised me in this article was, I think, how differently people see their lives and their work. I've seen this several times when we've been involved in some almost labor conversations between management and frontline workers and companies. And professionals are oftentimes flabbergasted that the working class isn't super excited about moving on to become a professional like them. What's going on here? Why is this? How come it's so difficult to advance somebody on? And I think actually the different values actually I think are at play in different ways of more loyalty. Instead of moving on and getting out of town and going to another city to find that perfect job, there's going to be more loyalty to family, to your neighborhood, to the people that helped to raise you. I actually think some of the assumptions that we have about work, and then what we even bring to scripture and what we teach about that, those I think need to come to the surface a little bit more. One of the things I wasn't surprised by, I would say, is the good people like Juan Pena, my friend at Cross Purpose. It's an urban nonprofit here in Denver. He's just a great guy. And he said, look, if this conversation is going to have any legs, it has to be broad enough to reach people of every background and socioeconomic class. And I think that's right. And I'd love to see that grow. And some of the movements of the Faith at Work movement and CCDA and the folks that care about justice and start to work together, because our ethic is based in the gospel and not so much in our politics.
That's really good. So I wonder, hypothetically speaking, you mentioned the scriptures. If you were dropped into a town you've never been before, let's just say somewhere in the Rust Belt, and at a church that has where most of the people are in working class jobs, and they said you were going to preach for a couple weeks. Now I know your impulse is to say that you're going to listen and hear from the folks, but what would you preach on? What would be the themes? What would be the texts?
You know, I would stay on Genesis 1 and 2 for a long time, and that we're made in the image of a maker. But I would heavily illustrate it with people's lives in their own congregation. I'm thinking about Kent Duncan, who I quoted in the article. He's a pastor of a working class church in Kansas. And actually noticing the work of those that are working in concrete or as mechanics or home health care aides or whatever it might be, and say there's an aspect that God is using your work to cultivate his creation for the flourishing of humanity. That's a pretty rare message for the working class to hear anywhere. And the church could offer that. Thinking also about our friend Steve Garber, who's now at Regent, but his actually background is in rural Colorado. He grew up here and spent a lot of time on the ranch and listening to farmers and listening to their life and the way that they understand caring for the land. Boy, there is, I mean, Genesis 2:15 of actually cultivating the land. Well, you can go much more literal than that. I mean, it's a little bit more ethereal when you have to go and figure out what that means for building an app. But when you're actually cultivating the land, it's almost a little bit easier to affirm and to say, this is the way that God is using you to care for the needs of our neighbors and cultivate his good creation. That's a pretty rare thing, especially in contexts where people may have felt underappreciated, undervalued by their workplace or even by their boss. The church can offer that sort of view of the goodness of work and crowning the working class with the dignity that is theirs.
Yeah, that's really good. I think that'd be a great sermon series. It makes me almost think about another twist on that question. You know, you mentioned Steve Garber, and he always says, knowing what you know, what are you going to do? Like, you're implicated by having seen what you've seen. So having written this article, being implicated by what you've learned, if you were going to be dropped into a, let's just do another stereotype, a Manhattan church where everybody is making six figures and would be sort of a white collar worker. How would that change the way you preach to them now?
Yeah, let me say two things. So if I was preaching or speaking about it, I actually feel like, just as you said, following your advice is probably the best advice, is that we would want to emphasize Genesis 3 realities of work, particularly with the powerful, because I think the vast majority of leaders, influential folks that I know, they don't see themselves as perhaps being a part of the problem. And let's be fair, actually, everybody is both a part of the problem and a part of the solution, because we're created good, but we're fallen. But I actually think that there are business systems that keep people in low-wage, high-stress positions for a very long time, and we're oftentimes not very aware of them. I think in other professional contexts too, we are used to having our word go, but helping professionals to see the working class that don't have as much cultural power and to give voice to those that don't have as much cultural power, I think that's really important. The second thing that I'd say on that, Jim, though, is one of the things that I think about often is that one of the points I made in the article was that we need to think about improving job quality. So folks at the Aspen Institute and the Pinkerton Foundation, Stephen Dawson's done some incredible work, but they're talking about what we need to do in America is both raise the floor and create ladders. So raise the floor on minimum standards for full-time jobs in America, as well as create ladders for people to advance in their career. And one of the things that after this article, we have a permanent place at Denver Institute in our business, especially in our business track that we work on, is to think about job quality and good jobs, and realizing that there are many jobs that are there, but there's no path forward. Schedules are chaotic. You can't advance. It keeps people stuck for a very long time. And I think being aware of that now makes me want to continually work with business leaders to say, look, if love your neighbor, if love God and love your neighbor is the big idea, then what does it look like operationalized into the HR policies and the actual day-to-day operations of your company? And I've worked with enough business leaders to know that that's not always easy. There's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of challenges, but it's really worth doing. It's really worth doing when more and more Americans can't figure out a way to support themselves and get their own kids out of the maze, as I wrote about in the article. That's something that's worth dedicating much more attention to and focus on in the Christian church in America.
That's really good. That's really good. Well, as you speak about the complexities of this, one of the unique, complex challenges that's been very disruptive is automation and how many jobs are projected to be lost through automation and how that will affect the working class. I know you've reflected on this with your work at the Denver Institute. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts on how do we as followers of Christ engage the issue of automation in a way that honors God, honors his physical world, honors our neighbors. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, we just did an event a couple weeks back on a Christian view of artificial intelligence. And so we had some wonderful speakers that I was happy to learn from on some changes in the way technology is really transforming the American workplace. Let me say a couple of things. First of all, blue collar, white collar, and pink collar work, nothing is outside of automation and artificial intelligence. There's going to be a lot of jobs that were here today and are going to be gone in 10 years. So the stereotypical, example is a cashier. And you see more and more cashierless stores, like Amazon coming out with a cashierless store, and that job won't be there in the future, right? Or you think about maybe in a manufacturing facility, you get a robot that can do it for, you know, cheaper and less expensive than a person. But there's also, legal knowledge that we had to go to a lawyer to get. You might be able to just find that in a big database. You may not need a lawyer in the future too. So this is actually happening across different socioeconomic spectrums in America today. Right now, it's already happening. And I actually think because of this technology, it's going to accelerate. And I don't think we need to be Luddites and smash all the technology. I think technology is going to keep growing. But one of the actual big concerns I do have is that as people are displaced, you know, whether it be one of the millions of truck drivers in America and thinking about the future of self-driving trucks, what will it look like to switch that person to a different kind of career that the economy has been asking for? And I think we're going to need way, 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 way more workplace learning programs. So companies that are starting to host some of their own learning programs to on-ramp people. I think we're going to need the idea of going and getting your college as a kid and then you're sort of set for a career, that's way outdated. I don't think that's going to be the future. I think people are going to have to go back to school continually throughout life. So different forms of education, whether that be on demand or a short degree or some sort of a workplace certification, I think it's going to become more the norm. And I think it's going to be also challenging for folks too, because the folks that I know that have tried to get into a higher paying job because they're in a lower paying job and they're trying to do family, trying to do school at night, you're trying to do one, maybe two jobs. It's really hard. It's really, really stressful and it's difficult to do. So finding ways where we as the Christian people in America can figure out how to allow people to retool for different jobs in the new economy at a much broader perspective or a lot more of that happening, I think that's going to be a big challenge for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, final question here. If you were to point people to some resources to go deeper, we're going to link to the article in the show notes. But if you were going to point to some other resources to go deeper, both in the content you were exploring for the article and just faith and work in general, where would you point them? How would you fill people's either their library with books or videos, or where should they go?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I guess if somebody's trying to understand more about the working class like myself, a couple of different books have been really helpful. So Robert Putnam's Our Kids is an excellent book on what's changed in America. I would really, really recommend that. Joan Williams has written a book called The White Working Class, Overcoming Class Cluelessness in America. It's pretty helpful. I actually really like Matthew Crawford's book and article, Shop Class as Soul Craft, and trying to understand the intrinsic satisfactions and dignity of people working with their hands. That's been very, very helpful to me and our fellows. We assign it to our fellows as well. And I would also recommend they start listening more to Mike Rowe. Work for a long time at a very broad level and trying to just bring about more knowledge that there's good jobs that a lot of people can go to, but oftentimes don't want to go into, especially in the trades and in construction. In our city, there's not nearly enough people going into those kind of careers, and there's a lot of good jobs out there as well. So I think that would be important. But again, on the learning side, I think my guess is that everybody listening to this podcast knows somebody that they would consider in the working class or they're in the working class. Start listening more to your neighbors. Start trying to understand what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what their dreams are, what their dreams aren't, and why. I think if we did this more, especially professionals that were listening more to the working class, we wouldn't see so many of the growing divides between classes that we see in America today. So listen to your neighbors.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Jeff, I appreciate you. I appreciate the work that you've done in writing this article and your thought leadership and in who you are as a person, man. Thanks for coming on this podcast.
Thanks, Jim.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Before we sign off, we wanted to let you know that we would really appreciate any feedback you have for us. In particular, it would really help us out if you left a comment and gave a rating on iTunes. It will help us get the word out. A 5-star rating would be awesome, but we appreciate honesty. Also, if you are seeking some clarity about your work and calling, we would love to connect with you and help provide some career coaching. You can find out more about the career coaching at faithworkrest.com. Until next time, we pray that God would help you discern your vocation, reimagine every aspect of your occupation, and give you rich, life-giving rhythms of rest. We pray that your work would glorify God and seek the good of your neighbor. See you next week.